Today's episode is sponsored by Herencia, Albuquerque's home for authentic Mexico City-inspired cuisine. Led by 2025 Chef of the Year Enrique Varavinos, Herencia serves bold flavor and heartfelt hospitality. They were also just voted Best New Restaurant in Albuquerque. Check out the menu at herenciaabq.com.
Welcome to Table Talks with Kay Woodward. Married for more than 43 years, Kay and her husband Galen have three married sons, nine grandchildren, and are longtime pastors in Albuquerque, New Mexico. With the recent release of her new cookbook, which is filled with treasured recipes and stories, she's excited to bring you into her world of faith and family. So, take a seat at the table with Kay as she welcomes special guests from varied backgrounds and stages of life to dive into relevant and important topics of today. Please enjoy today's episode.
My guest today is my friend Jessica McGinnis, a wife, mom, and deeply courageous world changer. Years after adopting from Uganda, she and her family moved back there with a surprise baby on her hip, following a longtime pull towards something bigger than herself. Now she's helping Ugandan moms find dignified work and real hope. Join me. Well, welcome to Table Talks and welcome, Jessica. I am so excited to have you on this episode today.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, this is going to be the best episode, the best 45 minutes. I can't wait for people to hear your story, and not just your story, but what you're doing currently. So if you're listening to this right now, listen to the whole thing because you're going to just love everything about her. So actually, this is our first time to meet face-to-face, even though we're 1,000 miles apart. You're currently in Texas. I met your husband, Brian, in 2021, which is crazy to me that it's been almost 5 years.
Wow.
I got to go on a trip to Haiti, and he was coming on team with Healing Haiti. And if people have listened to this podcast or have my cookbook, they know that I'm a huge supporter of Healing Haiti, and proceeds from my cookbook go to Healing Haiti still. And I've just always felt a heart for it. But as older people do, as I met him, I started following you on social media. You know, we like to get in everybody's business. So I started following you and just felt a real connection. And we were talking before we started recording that you kind of felt like a daughter to me. So anyway, I'm so glad you're here and so glad to talk to you. So let's just jump right in.
Okay.
Right now you're in Texas. So what are you doing in Texas right now?
So I have a home in Texas, and we're in my hometown. This is where I was born and raised. So we are here just visiting right now. We've been here for almost a month, but we have another home in East Africa, Uganda, and that's where we've been the last 6 months. We kind of uprooted our life and moved there, so we're on break right now.
Are you guys, I don't know. So did you ever do ministry outside of Texas, or have you guys always, before you moved to Uganda, were you doing your ministry only in Texas?
So I should say ministry, like, loosely. We weren't paid for it. We've kind of just been ourselves wherever we are. However, we did live in Minnesota, just right outside of Minneapolis. And we were actually pastors in a former life. And we started a couple of churches. And so we lived there. That's where I met my husband. And then before that, I lived a couple of years in Europe. So
where in Europe did you live?
Switzerland, very different from Uganda.
Very. We were recently in Germany, down south, close to the Swiss Alps. And I just think that part of Europe is so, so beautiful. It felt like a fairy tale to me.
Yeah, it's like not real life.
No, it's not. And I'm okay with that every now and then, to have a little fairy tale going on. So you guys started a couple of churches. I thought I had remembered Brian saying that. And you were in ministry, and then you got back to Texas. Brian was going to be with Healing Haiti for a while, but then the unrest and everything that happened in Haiti and still happening, we can't get there. No one can get on the island.
It was hard.
I pray every day. I pray for a miracle every day for that place. But so you guys went through some changes at that point and had a lot of I don't know. I mean, you had to rethink what was going to happen.
Yeah, we just, when we were in Minnesota, we did feel like our time was done there. And I mean, anybody that's in ministry or that's a pastor probably knows, like, it's just hard. And I don't think I was cut out for it. So I just didn't, I wasn't. I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And I was feeling like we were supposed to move back to my hometown. It took a year for Brian to kind of catch on. But we eventually, yeah, moved cross country. We moved here and he started working for Healing Haiti. But then eventually he got an opportunity to work at our friend's company. It was kind of up and going at this point, but it's pretty big now, doing like solar inverter manufacturing sort of things.
I
So
remember that
he's
now.
always had a heart for Africa, Uganda specifically. My daughter's adopted from there. So he was always trying to figure out how to incorporate that in our lives,
So that's a huge jump from Texas to East Africa. But so, what the yes to Africa? That's a huge yes. And so, when did like you guys start even just saying, okay, we could move there. I mean, that is, it's one thing to go on a trip. It's one thing to go do mission work, but to say we're going to go there and immerse in this place, was that like a late night conversation or how did that happen?
Okay. I'm kind of a strange person. So
That's why
when
I,
I was.
okay, that's exactly why I'm drawn to you. I love your candid, I love your sarcasm. I like all everything about you. So go for it.
Thank you. Okay. So actually, when I was really little, I grew up in small town East Texas. So this has to be divine. I didn't really know that it was God at the time. I didn't know God at the time. God knew me. I was. Even from a young age, I would watch these movies or like read these books about Africa, and I had this knowing that I was going to be in Africa, somewhere in Africa doing God knows what one day. And that's always how I've moved through life. I just like things just kind of click and I just know this is it. So when I was I had actually had like this sort of flash vision when I was a little girl, and I saw me as an adult, and I was holding an African baby. And so I would tell people, like, I'm gonna adopt, an African baby, or I'm gonna move to Africa. And again, small town East Texas, like, everyone laughed at me. And so I was like, I think I should probably just keep this to myself. But then it was like these little things, like, do you remember the movie, Hotel Rwanda? Did you ever watch
Yes.
that?
Yes.
Okay, so I just remember it ruined me. Like when the UN came and they took out all the like white Americans, Europeans, and they left them there. But there was that one, I think, British lady that stayed behind with the children. I was like, I will, that is going to be me. And so I always just like saw myself in these stories. And so when I met Brian and we were talking about maybe getting married, I was like, one thing you got to know, like, if you're going to marry me, we're going to end up in Africa someday. And he was like, okay. So it, for me, it started when I was really young. Just this is the place that I want to be. And I've always had a fascination with sort of underdeveloped countries and poverty. Just really, it burdened me.
You have
So.
an extremely empathetic heart. You remind me so much of my oldest granddaughter. I promise you, and I hope she listens to this when it comes out because she's just so much like that. I mean, the people that are struggling that don't have enough, and I don't know all the, sometimes I can't remember all the socially correct terminology, but you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I grew up, it was underprivileged. You don't say that now, but anyway, the people that are struggling, and you have a heart. You the underdog, the one that nobody has faith in. I see it through all your social media, and it seems so genuine. So I think that empathy is such a thing that we don't have so much in our culture. So it's so beautiful to see in someone. So it seems very faith-filled, and we're going to get into your whole story. Like I'm sitting here thinking, okay, this is so brave. Or crazy, but so faith-filled. And you're on this end of things right now, but you've walked through a spiritual journey that deviated some
Oh,
from
yeah.
what you knew as a little girl, you know, what you thought you wanted to do. There was a, I think most people, and I won't say we all, but most people have a time in their life where maybe they deviate from a calling, or if they're a Christian, from we question or struggle or think through the whole process. I also grew up in church, and have, as a senior adult now, I've looked back and questioned myself, why do I believe things? And thankfully, I worked through it. But I'd love to talk about that. I think that, like I say, your story is so, things with God didn't feel neat and tidy for you all the
No.
time. And you thought they should, I bet, because you'd been a pastor, pastor's wife, all the things. So
Yeah.
let's talk about that part of your story. So let's just jump in. What kinds of things did you wrestle with God? Because it seems like you've had a pretty perfect life.
No. Oh my gosh. So I wasn't always a Christian. I was like wild, crazy. So I actually had a dream when in my 20s, I had a dream one night from God. And it was very life altering, like so much so that I was like, I should probably quit my friends and like everything I'm doing in my life. You know, I should probably like stop doing drugs and things like that. So I had an encounter with God. And then I grew up in like a Southern Baptist sort of culture. So it wasn't like I didn't have exposure and I didn't know things. But this was different. So I was living in Europe actually when this happened. So this is when I started sort of following Jesus. I was just like, I have never experienced a love like this. Like wherever you are, I'm gonna be. And that's when God was like, you should go home and stop running away from your pain. So I moved back to America. That's how I ended up in Minnesota. It's kind of a longer story, but became a part of the church, met my husband, and was just really passionate about God, you know? And I still had a lot of maturing to do, I will say. So some of those years I look back and I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. But, you know, I think as the years go on and you have history with God, I started to sort of realize that we do a really good job of telling people what to think, but we don't do such a great job of telling people how to think. So much of like what I believed about God was because someone told me to believe it. And I only had like a few things that were mine, you know? And like I love the scriptures. I love all the books and a lot of them aren't easy to understand. So like, I'm just fascinated at like, what is the truth? I just need to know. And that's kind of been my theme with God since the dream is, who are you? I want to know you. And I would read these stories in the Bible. And it was like, he would show up in like this dark cloud and was like, what is that? You know, and just freaky. But also very personable, like when you get to Jesus, you know? And so I was just like, who are you? Well, I have a certain like gifting type, or maybe it's just how I'm wired that I kind of like gear towards more like, I don't know, like more charismatic denominations. I don't know. So I found myself in this church that it did not start off this way. But very subtly, it became like very cult-like. And so I found myself in like a cult. Now this is after I had left Minnesota and I wasn't a pastor at this point. Basically, I got really tired. So, you know, religion is like a lot of work.
Yes.
So you do a lot of work for God. You live in the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. So you know what's good and you know what's evil, and you're always assessing where you're at. And like there's no life in that. It's just death. Even when you're doing good, you feel like this sort of religious pride. When you don't do good, you feel shame. So it's just kind of like this thing that I was on. And And yet I was having these experiences with God that was like blowing my mind that like, I think you're better than what I'm hearing people say at church. But I was still like not able to like trust myself with that because I was taught to like trust the person that's up front, you know? So one day I went on this walk and I was like, God, I just want to know you. And I think I have these minds, like this framework in my mind of some things that aren't true about you. Would you take that? Would you take them down? And God said, all of them? And I felt like this caution. And I was like, maybe I don't know what I'm asking. As many as I can handle.
Wow.
And that's when things just started to crumble. Like I call it my blackout. So kind of from one day to the next, like God, it was just everything was gone. Like I couldn't sense God. I couldn't hear God. God was not there. I was just like I started to see religion and like what I was doing. And I was just like, what is happening to me? And so it was like my this God that was so close just wasn't there anymore. And so I left this church and I had nowhere to go. And it was very disorienting. So I call it my blackout. The first year of that, I would wake up every day and I would try to like claw myself out of it. Like, I got to get back to this thing or figure out how to like get God back. I was just like, what's happening to me, you know? And I love learning from the old saints, the mystic saints. And so there's one quote from St. John of the Cross. And it was like the only thing that I had at this point in my life. And he said, sometimes that you have to lose God to find God. And I clung to that. That was all that I had. I couldn't take God out of the religious works, like, and put him over here and then just do that. It was all together. So I just had to like let it go. So after the first year of that, I just sort of like surrendered to the darkness. There was nothing. There was just no sense of God whatsoever. And it wasn't like I turned my back on him or ran away or anything. It was just like I didn't know where this was going.
That's a
So
scary place to be, I'm sure.
I was terrifying until I surrendered. And then I was just like, it is 100% up to you to get me out of this. I don't even know what I'm in.
I know that resonates with so many people, even if they don't want to admit that out
Yeah.
loud, people are going through that. I mean, what was Brian, your husband, thinking during all this? Like he's such a gentle spirit, is what I remember. Reminds me a lot of
He
my benches. Is he over in the corner going, what the
is.
fuck is he thinking?
He was like, we've always been very like independent people. So we've always respect, like, we want each other to kind of just do what they want to do. So he was just like, it's gonna be okay. Like, you're gonna get through this. He was just like a cheerleader, an encourager. And I was like a mess, you know. I
I
felt like I
keep
was losing my life force.
And I'm sure deep down he's going, God, please reveal yourself. I mean, because that's, when you watch someone you love going through something, you can't really take them out of it. And I can think of all kinds of situations many people have gone through. You see a loved one, a family member, and you can't do it for them. You just
Right.
pray, God, hold their hand through this journey. Because ultimately, I think we know God's going to reveal himself. At the right time. And it sounds like, I mean, I sure wouldn't want to put words in your mouth, but he needed you to, however you had to do it, lose all that religious idea about him because he wanted you to really know him. And
Yeah.
you couldn't get rid of it until you started over with a blank chalkboard. It's like
Yeah,
a
that was
blank chalkboard.
so exact. That's exactly it. And so I think year two, this lasted 3 years. So year two, I know. I had actually bought this book like years before this happened and started reading it again. It was Saint John of the Cross, The Dark Night of the Soul. And whatever, year two in this, one night, for whatever reason, I picked this book up and I start reading it where I left off, and it's explaining exactly what I'm going through. And I just, for the first time, had like this hope of like maybe you are doing this work in me that I'm completely unaware of, like this backdoor work, because that's what it's all about. Just this, where God like sort of matures you, where you stop relying on your senses and you just have like raw faith, you know? And so I was like, please let it be. I kind of clung to that. That carried me to the next year, the third year. And then I can go into the story of like literally from one day to the next, like the lights got turned back on.
I
And it
saw
was.
it. I feel like I saw this happen because
Yeah.
you're very open. I'm sure you guarded some things, but you're open. You were in your social media, and I'm watching this journey, and you didn't know. I'm behind the scenes watching this, praying as hard as I can. God, help her find you again. I see the searching. I literally have never seen you in person till right now. And I said to you, I want to come see you. I like wanted to hug you or something through that, but I really did. I was praying behind the scenes. I have a good friend that was also in Healing Haiti, and I reached out to her. I said, "We're going to pray for Jessica." And you didn't realize people were covering you in prayer that you didn't even had never met, because God could only do the work. But I feel like you needed people to hold your arms up through the battle of your life, really.
Thank you.
It
That
was
means a lot.
really a big deal for me. And you were about to say from one day to the next, I think I jumped for joy. I'm going to have you go ahead and finish that part of the story. I was beside myself telling people in my family that don't know you, "Oh my gosh." So tell this part of the story. It's a great.
Okay, so I actually like I went to this gala and it's great. I love this gala. It's a hospital gala. I go every year and you get dressed up, you drink wine with your friends, and I went home and I like nothing happened, but I felt like I'd hit rock bottom. And I was actually in therapy. So kind of what was behind the scenes even further that I didn't share was I was also going through like I just had a miscarriage. And so I was just like, life is not great. So I was talking to my counselor and I was like telling her how I was feeling. And she's like, rock bottom is actually the furthest away that you've gotten from yourself. Doesn't have to mean that you're like, you know, sleep on your doorstep because you've been drinking or something. But so I was like, I think I'm hitting rock bottom. And there's like, my life was actually like I was actually experiencing so much success and like it was weird because everything was going right except this one thing, like as far as how the world would see success, you know? So I was in my living room and I had this thought, like I could feel myself like sinking in, like I cannot do another day of this. And so I had a thought, Jessica, why don't you just do what you used to do? And you used to just ask the Holy Spirit something, and then whatever came to your mind, you used to just do it. And so I said, Holy Spirit, what do I do? And my first thought was text your friend Lindsay and ask her what book she's reading. And so I texted her, she texted me right away. And she told me this book that she was reading, and I was like, oh, like it was so like, I'm not, or you gotta be kidding me. Like it was just like, you know, I'm not even gonna tell you what book it was. But I was like, Jessica, stop, like just explore. So I go online and I go to Amazon and I'm gonna get this book. God bless this man that did a review, and he basically gave me an overview of the whole book in like the review comments. So I start reading his long review about every chapter, and I'm like, it was about offense, actually. It was about how it can just like lock you up and shut you down. And so I was just like, is this like the thing that's been going on with me, or is this just like the first step that I needed to do, or whatever? And I was like, I don't care. I went on a walk and I was like, I'm not coming back to my house until I'm changed. So I go on this walk and I was just like, God, who am I offended with? And like, I saw this person come up and it was like, oh. And so I just pretended like the person was with me and I told them everything, like how much I felt like they hurt me, how much they stunted me in life, and how angry I was. And then I was like, but you know what? Like, I just forgive you. Like, I've got to let this go. And I would just like, the wind was blowing, I just let it go. And then another person came, even my hometown came up. Like, it was just all this stuff. And so I just started like saying my piece, but also just like forgiving and just letting it go. And I started to feel like this life force surging through me again. You know, I felt like, I mean, I came home and I really felt like I was doing the 12 steps. I was calling everybody, trying to make amends with them. And like, it was just, I couldn't sleep. I was just like, I'm back.
It's that is it, okay. This is, we could do a whole podcast episode just on forgiveness and letting things go, but it's interesting that how freeing letting go of an offense is and what that did. I mean, that was instantaneous. It's hard
And
to
the thing
believe.
was, yeah, God understood my wounds and my pain. Like, he got it. But it was like this low, like this almost this unconscious sort of thing that I held on to, you know? Like, even though I felt like I had forgiven, I'd gone, it
Yes.
was clearly it was still there. So.
Because if you had noticed it sooner, you would have and known the freedom that would come, you would have dealt with it. So it's something that's down inside that we don't notice. And the enemy does it on purpose so that we believe lies about everything else. And it's just really one simple thing that needs to be done. And we're talking here a 3-year journey of a deep, dark pit that you were waking up and facing every day in the midst of a wonderful husband. It's like your life wasn't bad. You had a great husband, a beautiful child, and not so, like you said, to look at you and your family, like they're not going through anything except that you were brutally honest on social media. And for someone like me to read that, and I just didn't skim past. And so I'm hoping that other people have seen that journey too, and that this story, then I'm excited for people to hear this because you give your story. Gives me so much hope for so many people. And it just raises the level of my faith to believe for someone else that it's never, someone is never too, like, too far gone sounds, awfully churchy, but I mean, in a place that they feel so far from God that they couldn't come back.
God was always like my one thing. It's always been my number one fascination. Like, he just fascinates me. So it did, it was the 3 years was just like, what's the point? You
And
know?
how old was your
And
daughter at that point?
oh gosh, she was 6, 7, 8, something like that. Yeah.
So
So.
much that, okay, so it's beautiful. And I just love everything about your story. So we're gonna jump because I want to make sure we get to hit everything. Okay, so real quick for everybody else, let's talk about you. I said you adopted a daughter from Uganda, and how old is she now?
She's 10.
So I have grandkids right around her age. I have 10, almost 10 grandchildren. One's on the way. But
Aww.
so you knew you wanted to adopt since you were a little girl. You adopted from Uganda. She's in Texas and all the places with you guys. And
Yes.
how old was she when you were able to bring her back to the States?
So I met her. Everybody always told me you'll never, you know, be able to adopt a baby. You might meet a baby, but the adoption process takes so long, you know. And I met her when she was 2.5 months old. So it was kind of like, I mean, I waited like 5 years in the process. It was kind of like when she was born, things happened really quickly, and she's perfect for our family. So she was 2.5 months old when I met her. She was 5.5 months old when she came to the States. So
That truly is, I mean, unheard of.
yeah.
It's so beautiful. Which, so you're living part of that little girl story, you adopted from Uganda. And then you guys thought, okay, we'll move there. And when I saw that you were moving there, I was like, seriously? But in the middle of all that, before you moved, another surprise happened.
Oh
I'm
my.
guessing you didn't have any other children except, what, tell me your daughter's name. from Uganda, the Faith. Okay, I was going to say Faith at first. There's a whole story. Her nanny now and everything. I love all the stories. But
Oh, yes, the other one,
Faith,
yeah.
you obviously hadn't had any other children. You had a miscarriage, so
It
infertility
wasn't.
must have been an issue.
Well, it honestly, like, adoption was always plan A for me. And I always just, I know that this is not normal, but I always just felt like there's children out there. Like, why would I have my own when they need a home? Not, that's totally not normal or everybody's desire. And that's okay. So, and it just never happened. We'd never gotten pregnant. And, but then I had this miscarriage, and you're kind of just like, this was, you're like, what? What was that? Very hard to make meaning around that. But, anyways, yeah, my husband and I had gone on a, I hadn't been to Uganda since we brought Faith home. So it had been like 9 years or something, 8 years. So my husband and I went to Uganda. He was like on a work trip. He was like in China coming to Uganda. So I met him in Uganda and it was so amazing. And that's when the opportunity to move there like just opened up because we had always been wanting to. You just can't force these things. Like it happened like in a car ride, like just instantly, you know? And so by the time we were home from that trip, like everything was planned. And so I think what you don't, I don't even know if I've shared this online, but a few months before that, but a few months before this Uganda trip, God had asked me, will you give me your life? And I said, I'm pretty sure we've already done that. What are you asking? And he said, I mean everything. Like, would you give me everything? And I saw the house, like I saw everything just on the table. It was like a trade. And I said, well, what do I get?
That's what
If
I
this is a trade, what do I get, you know? And he said, you can have me. And so I actually did consider that cost, but I traded it. And then we went on this trip. The opportunity opened up to move to Uganda. We come home, we tell our family, we're moving. A month later, I find out that I'm pregnant at almost 40.
Thank you, Foundation Health and Wellness, and Jelaine Fallhaber, CNP, for being a sponsor on Table Talks. Her practice offers thoughtful, personalized care that helps patients feel informed and confident. Visit foundationhw.com to learn more. Hey, friends, I'm so glad you're here. If you're enjoying this episode, please take a second to subscribe, leave a quick review, and share it with a friend. It's the best way for people to find the podcast and to be encouraged. Now, back to the conversation.
And I'm just like, what is happening? Like, I'm so out of control with my life now. And God was just like smiling, like, well, this is what I wanted, you know, like you gave me your life. And I felt like really conflicted at the beginning of the pregnancy because, like, this was my chance. I was finally going to move to where I had felt it was in my heart to like go. And now I'm going to have a baby. Like, how am I going to do any work? And
I'm feeling sorry for all the family and grandparents when I saw that. And then you're going to Uganda. I'm like, you can't go now. That's what I'm thinking from afar. Of course, I never said it, but you can't go now. You cannot do this. You cannot take that baby across the world. And then
no.
you packed up and you said, we're selling everything and here's we're leaving. And I'm like, oh, she's really doing it.
Yeah, I don't recommend doing that. Like, that was. This has been the hardest year of my life. So,
It's
but
When did you
the
okay, so
baby
that
has been a
baby
key
was, I'm sorry, go
thing.
ahead.
No, the baby Naomi, we named her Naomi, has been like the door to everything that I'm doing right now.
I love that. And so she was born, and you guys went in the summertime, correct? You moved over, was it summer, to Uganda? And I, living in a totally different culture, I mean, I would assume you think you're ready, but you moved to a totally different culture. And what did some of that reveal about your own assumptions? I bet you went with this list of things, how it was going to be. What was
Yeah.
different?
I didn't anticipate the grief. Oh my gosh, I grieved. We just put our dog down before we left too. So I was grieving my dog. I love my home. I was grieving my family, my community. Like there was a part that was hurting inside of me that had never hurt before. And my daughter, Faith, the oldest, was grieving a lot. And so, I feel like women, we kind of carry this emotional weight of the family. So it was just like, whoa, this is, I don't like this. It was just so heavy. We were crying every day. And I didn't know how to help her. And you doubt, like, was this a bad move? Like, no, everything was pointing to this. And you just sit in it. So I wasn't expecting that.
You tried to put her in school, and I could, you didn't say everything about it, but I could read between the lines that she was just, it didn't work. I mean, she probably was feeling separated from you and everything that felt safe to her in a, a different world.
Yeah, it was like too much too fast. So we tried homeschooling, and now she's in another school, but she just like where we're at right now, she's just not turned a corner. So like we're in the middle of that. It's really hard for like your whole family to not be on the same page. And so we're just kind of in the thick of that right now. So she would prefer to be here. Family and friends are everything to her. We feel called to like do the work in Uganda, move humanity forward, help raise up a nation, So, but then also I'm called to my children. So we're kind of just in the middle of that chaos.
What a conundrum. And her age has a lot to do with that, because at that age, at 10 and moving into 11 and 12, they're girls and boys, but girls especially, everything starts changing. And which
Yeah.
I you so you're the outsider in Uganda. You come in as a white woman from United States, and you're the outsider, and you're trying to, hey, we're here, let's fit in. How has that been?
Well, okay, so Ugandans kind of treat you like royalty. Like they love Americans. And we've been so kind to them too, but they also like they're very welcoming people. So in some ways, like you don't feel like that outsider feeling like where it's uncomfortable. It's more like you're very welcomed in, but there's also like it's uncomfortable in the sense of like they know that you have a lot. So, and there's so many needs, like there's a lot of asking for help every day, which can just get really tiring, because you want to help and you have to say no sometimes. So I think like being the outsider, it's just like I'm in their culture and that can be exhausting. So there are a lot of things that I will like bend to and adapt because it's their culture. And then there's just some things that I'm like, no, I'm sorry, I can't do this. I just can't.
That's that I could imagine myself being the same way. And your heart, you guys got there not knowing what exactly you were going to do. I'm not sure about Brian, but you were looking for a place to help people without standing there with a sign saying, I'm here to help. You're looking for
Yeah.
need, and where's your purpose, and where can you have the biggest impact? And which leads us to this amazing, I don't want to call it ministry, because it's really, it is in the actually the truest form of the word,
Yeah.
because that's what, Christianity is really all about. But you, how, okay, we have to start. How did you find what you're doing now? You started, is it even a nonprofit yet, or is it just something you're just
In
on the ground
process.
floor in the process? Tell us how this
So,
happened.
okay, so I knew that I needed help with the baby. I was just feeling very overwhelmed with her needs, my daughter's needs, trying to like get a house set up. I mean, we walked into a house that had nothing, just like some beds and one couch. And I was just really overwhelmed. I knew I needed help. I had met this woman from Australia, and she sent me a recommendation for nannies. So like in the expat world, everybody has recommendations, for their like house help, for nannies, gardeners, guards, like everything. So you just sort of go on that. Anyways, this is when I met Ruth, which I think is so funny because Ruth and Naomi. And she has been working for expats for many years, but we hired her to be our full-time nanny. And basically the first week that she was in my home, I was like, there's something different about you. And come to find out, I feel like she's like a Ugandan version of me. She's just like different. She sees things differently. She's just different, and she's just had a really hard life, and she's always just believed that God wanted to be good to her, and she never gave up.
That's beautiful.
And so she was like, "You see what God put in me?" And I was like, "It's so obvious." But it's just time. So we ended up like just getting to know each other, and we would talk about like what she would hear at church, from which can be like a lot of like fast for 90 days and then God will do something for you. And I was like, I just got out of that, And she was like, I don't think that I have to do that for God to be good to me. And she was like, hearing that people would fast and pray just to hear God. And she's like, I just hear God like every day. And so she was like, what if we gathered some women and just sort of like talked about all of this, encouraged each other? And I was like, yeah. So we started meeting at her house, which is like in the thick of the city. And these women just started coming, and they just kept coming. And we would sit on the floor, and then like God was there. And I could tell you these crazy stories that would happen, but like it was just like people were coming, and then they were like, yeah, I think I want to believe in Jesus. It's just effortless. So you know that there's something there. Well, as you get to know the women, you start to hear their stories, and they're sad, and they're also like they want to do something about it, about their struggle, but there's no jobs. And that's sort of been the theme of the nation, is there's people want to work. They hustle as much as they can, but there's just no jobs. So Ruth and I started to think, like, what could we create that would create jobs for them? And I had, when I was in my little blackout, dark night of the soul, I had started a business. So I kind of like had, I knew what to do differently. I knew kind of how to do that. So we brainstormed about what we could do, and I thought maybe we could do like a home decor line, or we could make rugs or bags, and we could export them. And then one weekend, I was kind of just ideating with ChatGPT, and this idea of the menstrual period kits came up. And I had been a part of a ministry that had done that before, and it's incredible. And I was like, I know how to sew, like, I can do this. And it just clicked. It was like that knowing, like, this is what we're supposed to do. So she comes to work on Monday, and the first thing she says is, what a weekend I've had. My oldest daughter, I had got called to boarding school because she had started her period for the first time. And I was like, this is a sign from God.
I believe it.
So I told her the idea, and she was like, this is a sign from God. And so we just started. We just jumped right in like the next week.
And you reached out for people maybe to help by sewing machines and some fabric and stuff. And I didn't even get a chance. People responded so quickly. I didn't even get a chance to give money to it. I'm not trying to give money to it. And you had everything you needed so quickly because you're so passionate about the reason. So tell us, it's how did you do it? What is in a menstrual period kit? I mean, we think we just go to the store and we grab some supplies. Why can't they?
So it's like an unimaginable thing, I think, for a lot of us. So just like they have nothing. So women are very far, like they're behind. When you have nothing, like every single month you have nothing for your period, you find like old rags, leaves, mattress stuffing, anything. And you kind of just stay home and you bleed. And you miss school, you miss work, and so you miss opportunity. And it's like we all do this. Like it's a God-given thing that we do. And it's for me, I hate it. I hated this reality for them. So a period kit is just a reusable pad. The ones that we're making is just five pads in a bag, and they'll last like a year to 2 years. So it gives you your life back.
And but they wash these, I'm guessing, and how do
Yeah.
they?
You just wash them and then you reuse them every month.
And then they can go to work, keep their job if they have a job. The teenagers can stay in school. I can
Yep.
imagine them missing a week of school every month to because they don't want to bleed in their clothes all the time.
Yeah, it's really embarrassing for them. So it's also like giving them their dignity back. Yeah.
So it's not just you and your nanny making these. I've seen pictures and videos. So I would imagine everything you do always explodes. I feel like that you have, when you put your hand on something, you're gifted and you're charismatic enough that people are drawn to you. And when God's in it, it just takes off. So what's happening with that now?
So, I just put a couple posts out there and we just got the startup money. And that was kind of just like, okay, this is God's in this. This is like the confirmation that I needed. I always like have some self-doubt, like, with most, like, is this going to be a flop? Like, there is some doubt, But after people were so like supportive and moved, I felt like, okay, this is his heartbeat. Like I'm riding this wave. So we buy sewing machines. We talk. So the women had been gathering. What I love about this idea is that the women are going to make the period kits that are in our Monday night gathering. And then we're going to donate them to even more vulnerable women and girls that live in the slums. So it's like a win-win. They get jobs. And then the other women get the period kits. So everybody's winning. So we started training and they had skills they didn't even know they had. They've already surpassed us. And they're just so eager. They would show up on like non-training nights just wanting to sit in front of the sewing machine and practice. And I wish when they walked in that room and they saw the sewing machines, and now we're training like just right where they live. Like it's not fancy. It's where they are. When they walked in that room and they saw those sewing machines, like I literally felt hope. Like I could see it and I could feel it. And they were just like, we've been praying for years. And they just feel forgotten, like no one cares, and yet they stayed faithful to God. And it's just like a really humbling feeling to know that you are the answered prayer.
Because hope is such a beautiful thing. Without hope, we really don't have, it's hard to get up and face the next day. When there's hope, you can face whatever circumstance comes your way. And hopelessness is a
I know.
sickness. I feel like it's a disease in our world that really cripples people, figuratively speaking, because hope is lost for so many people. And the fact that we can bring hope. I've had lots of people on this podcast that are friends of mine that are doing their best. They have a nonprofit and they're just doing these amazing things. And they've all gone through the thing, well, this isn't enough. I can only do this. I'm only helping so many. And God really spoke to me, and I know He's spoken to you. Just do what I've asked you to do. And if
Yeah.
everyone will do what they're asked to do, we will make a dent. You're only called to do what's right in front of you and what God has said that, Jessica should do.
Yes, I 100% agree with that. I was actually on the back of this motorcycle taxi and we just started and I was like thinking about my friends here who are so talented and feeling kind of insecure of like, oh my God, like God, they could do this so much better than me. Like I'm not that great at this and this and like, oh, if they did this, it would be so good. And he was just like, well, why aren't they doing it then? And he was like, I asked you to do it, so just do it. And I think I've realized that it doesn't take a lot to make a difference in people's lives. It's just you just offer your little life and do what you can. And so that's kind of where we're at. It's just we have a so it's actually a bigger dream than just the period kits. It's more like job creation. So when every time we do a project, we're going to start doing projects this year. We will provide jobs for the women and period kits for women in the slums, but a little pool of money will go to savings. And a lot of them want to, they're farmers. So we want to buy land and then creates more jobs and then another pool. And so we actually just want to start creating businesses and creating jobs and just kind of go from there. So this is the first one.
It's daunting, but very exciting. And
Yeah.
God-given dreams have a way of being just that. They're overwhelming, daunting, but it wouldn't be a God-given dream if you had all the pieces put together yourself, or you had everything you needed to do it, or every skill, because then God steps in and then you know, okay, this is God. From the name of your nanny to her being like personality with you feed off each other, which is a beautiful thing. And women just organically appearing at a not even a formal Bible study, it's just so such a beautiful thing. I love all your posts. I'm excited because when this podcast airs, we will, for people that watch it versus listen, we'll throw some pictures in so they can see some of the things
Okay.
you do, and I want them to follow you too. But time is, it's crazy how quick this time goes by. I'm like, how does this even happen? I have some lightning round questions for you. Just, I know people want to get to know you better. And if they want to, first of all, before I forget, if they want to follow you on Instagram, how do they find you?
So my Instagram handle is just Jessica underscore originals.
And I'll put this in the description of the podcast when it airs so they can see that too. It's really fun. You're a fun follow because you do a lot of life on there, which I like. That's how I like to do with my social media. But here we go, lightning round. So, one word or phrase to describe your first 5 months in Uganda.
Hard.
That's awesome.
Very hard.
I know if I lived near you, we would be really good friends. What's been the hardest thing?
Overstimulation.
Wow.
Just extreme overstimulation.
Like you have to have guards at your house. Someone has to bring you the rug you're going to
The
buy,
house.
several of them,
Yeah.
shoes. You don't go to Home Goods. Yeah,
The
they have.
house, that's the problem. Like the house is fully staffed, which sounds great, but then there's someone everywhere working. And it's a city, it's chaos. You're just like overly stimulated.
That's crazy. What do you love the most? What do you love?
Love Ruth.
I think I would too. I would love to.
Yeah.
I just keep having this mental picture, and I did from the time you moved. I'm going to wind up there one day.
Please.
I
Please come.
feel like maybe it wasn't Texas I was going to see you. It was always Uganda, and you just, never know. So, what's your favorite Ugandan food?
I don't really like Ugandan food. I like their fruits a lot.
I see you in the market trying to find anything that resembles food that you're used to when you're
Yeah.
shopping, when you post. I love it.
I mean, their avocados are amazing, but I don't really like Ugandan foods. I'll eat it, but.
In Mombasa, we go to East Africa with our church a lot, but they eat a lot of starch, a lot of starches, which it just fills you up and plugs you up. All of this.
Exactly.
What one thing that's totally different than you thought it would be?
I think what I mentioned earlier, just like the cost of it all, like the grief that I've felt being away from a place in the world that I really love, and like having, it's like now, no matter where I'm at, I always miss something. So.
I totally understand what you're saying. I feel like there's going to be people listening that will think or say, "What? How do I stand with her? What can I do? What's one simple way that they could stand with you?" Does your business have a name now?
Yes, we call ourselves Gemma. So we are Gemma, and this is after actually Saint Gemma from Italy. She suffered a lot and she stayed faithful to God. And these women remind me of her story. And also, I just like a little play on words. They're like hidden gems that I have had a front row seat of finding, and seeing. So we are Gemma, and it also looks really great when you put it in like a cool font. So that's what we call ourselves. But I would say if people want to jump in or just start following me, at the very least, I'll entertain you. So.
That's true. I will vouch for that. And then also, if there's a need, you post on social media. That's the easiest way. If people are following you and keeping up with you, then they'll see the need. But I will tell you, if Jessica posts a need, you better act fast because people jump on this quickly. I think we're just so excited about the concept of what you're doing. And it's for people that can't move to Africa or move across the world, they can help in ways that you have needs. And so you'll post those and they can, it's going to grow. They can watch it happen. I have loved to have also a front row seat into this 4 or 5 year journey since I met your husband 5 years ago, which is crazy. So also,
Thank
people could be listening, thinking, I kind of have a nudge to do that. God placed a dream in my heart. Maybe it's not a dream to move across the world and do what you're doing, but it's that something inside that they've just pressed down and never really trusted God. And I believe you said, he said, I want all of you or give me everything. They've never done that. What would you say to someone? How would you help someone who that feels that nudge of the Holy Spirit? How would they move on it?
I think I have this little thing that I do. I zoom out of my life and I see my timeline, like the whole thing. And I always just say, are you going to regret this? Like when you're done in this realm? And if it's yes, then I just do it anyways, even if I'm afraid. And so I'm very like big picture. I'm very conscious of like life just goes by so fast and like who do you want to be? Who are you? Who has God made you in him? And so like just like for me it's been helpful to just like who cares what people think and who cares if it doesn't make sense and who cares if they call you a heretic? Like just do what you feel compelled to do in your heart.
Love that. I love
Even
every
if you're
second.
afraid, you can be afraid and do it. It's fine.
Most of the time, I'll be 65 this summer, which I cannot believe. And most of the time that I've done something that I really felt that it was going to take God for me to do it, I've always been afraid. I am afraid until I do it. To start this podcast, I had actually, I wasn't as afraid as I should have been. I thought it was going to be simple. I thought, oh, whoever can do this. Everybody has one. So I should have been a little more afraid. I had much more confidence than I had skill set to go with it. But God, would you mind before we end this episode? I just love to pray at the end of everyone. I love the guest. If you're comfortable to pray over the people that listen, it's interesting because although it will air on a certain date, it's crazy to me how people will find an episode 5 months later. 6 months later, God will bring it in front of them, and it's just what they need at a specific time. Maybe they'll be praying, and God will say, whatever your friend is listening to, whatever podcast she's listening to, you go on it. So
Yes,
I feel that. So would you just pray over us as we close out today?
I will.
Thank
Yes.
you. Thanks.
God, I just pray that you would do what you do with whoever's listening or the words that we've spoken today, that you would just like use them in in the way that you do and empower. For anyone that's listening that feels hopeless, I know that you've got them. Would you just reassure them that you've got them? And then for anyone that's listening that feels that nudge that Kay was talking about, just know that you are courageous and that with God you can't fail. And I really just pray that we all would remember the one thing, and that's just you and your beauty, and just how wonderful you are, and how wonderful it is to like have this existence where you're like with us and in us. and that we are literally your hands and feet. So keep our hearts just alive and sensitive to whatever sphere you have us in, and continue to just show us who we are, who you made us to be in you. And it's all in you and because of you, Jesus. Amen.
Amen. I've really truly loved this time with you. I knew I would. I knew the second you said yes that it was a God moment and meant to be. And I can't say thank you enough.
Thank you, Kay. This has been great. I feel so honored to be here.
Yeah, I've loved it. I've loved it. I can't wait to see you one day in person. I've said this to you several years ago,
We
and
will meet.
I did, and I can't believe I said that. But anyway, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And I'll be praying for you as you head back to Uganda soon, and especially for your daughter, for Faith, and that transition will go smoothly for her, and she'll have her God revelation.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I will see you soon. Thanks to Flowers by Zach Lowe, Albuquerque's family-owned florist since 1993, creating beautiful, fresh arrangements at affordable prices with unmatched customer service. Order online at flowersbyzachlowe.com.
Thank you for joining me today on Table Talks. For more content and information about upcoming episodes, please visit my website at kwoodward.com. You can also explore other podcast links and resources there. Until next time.